Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. When it comes to humor, we at Word of Mouth are a team divided. Some of us like to think that literary puns are a wordy cause, and science puns are elemental. If you groaned or maybe even cringed a little hearing that, you are not alone. As The Atlantic senior associate editor Julie Beck recently wrote, people love to hate puns. They urge punsters to delete their Twitter accounts. They run screaming from the office punster. To better understand why people so abhor puns, we invited Julie and Charlie Hopper to duke it out and have some pun. Charlie works for the Young and Larimore Ad Agency. He's a songwriter and writes dispatches for McSweeney's. The one that we are talking to him about today is The Pun Is Not Your Friend. We've asked the two of them to prepare a brief overview of their arguments for or against puns. Julie, would you like to start off with the charm or the value of puns?
Sure. So, you know, there's nothing wrong necessarily with, you know, people who don't like puns. We all have our own senses of humor. And, you know, whenever somebody tries to be funny, there's going to be some people who don't think that they're funny at all. But the thing about people who don't like puns is they really tend to want to make sure that you know it. You know, they'll groan and they'll roll their eyes. And like you said, if you're on Twitter, as soon as you tweet a pun, you're going to get a flurry of exasperated replies. You know, God forbid somebody remain silent and risk thinking that, you know, they enjoyed the pun. But the complaint that puns aren't funny is to some degree a misunderstanding of what puns are and what they can do. One humor researcher who I spoke to told me that puns a lot of the time are less about the ha-ha and more about the aha. Though I maintain that puns can be very funny sometimes. A lot of times it's more of an I see what you did there. They can be sort of a way to stretch the boundaries of language in ways that can be silly or that can actually be very powerful. For example, Chinese is a language that lends itself very well to puns. And in China, people have used puns to talk about things that have been blocked by the censors. Last year, actually, Chinese officials banned puns from radio and television. They said to keep, you know, the culture of their language intact. But a lot of people suspect that it was actually to sort of quash the criticism that puns allowed for. They can also be visual puns, you know, images with more than one meaning. An example people see a lot is the Google logo doodles, the doodles that they do for holidays and stuff, or like the FedEx logo, which has an arrow in it. And you can see it in high art as well. There's a sculpture someone referenced to me when I was writing the article, which is the Picasso's bullhorn sculpture. Mm-hmm. It's like a bicycle seat and bicycle handlebars, and they're arranged to look like the head of a bull. And so that's an example of a pun that people might not necessarily think of, but what it's doing is giving a new and unexpected meaning to something, which, whether they're silly or whether they're serious, is what puns do.
Okay, thank you, Julie Beck. Charlie Hopper, over to you.
Well, a lot of good points. First, though, I have to say I'm a dad, and as a dad, I am required now and then to say a pun. So I'm not advocating zero pun tolerance. It's like puns are Fritos, and it's okay to eat Fritos now and then. Just, you know, don't eat too many Fritos. There's three reasons then that it basically becomes anti-pun at that point. First, it's like a pun calls off the hunt. You see it all the time, journalists especially, advertising writers, the temptation is huge to stop when you get to a pun. It always gets a reaction, and it seems relevant, like it ties two ideas together, but then it uses up space where you could have really made a human connection. Because the second thing, a pun is it's just playing with etymology. It's just a coincidence of language. And after, like, age 6, it's not that interesting to demand someone's attention to point out coincidences, you know, especially if you do it a lot. And then third, a pun is like a person who wants everyone to listen to them play the Maple Leaf Rag on the piano. They're not looking for participation, not trying to share any feelings. It's just forcing you to wait it out. So when someone groans at a pun, I think it's because you called off the search for a better joke by pointing out a coincidence of language in a one-way remark, which really can't be built on except by someone else coming up with another pun, which becomes the conversational equivalent of the old video game Pong.
Okay, there was Charlie Hopper. You know, we don't really have to continue the pretense of the debate, but now that you've floated some of your ideas out there, I'd love to pick up on some of them. One, that this is, the pun is a dad joke. Now, all of us have rolled our eyes at our dad's pun jokes. It seems that they're not mom jokes. Is there a sort of, I'm bringing gender into it already, is there a gendered nature of puns or pun makers?
Yeah, I like dad jokes. I think there is a weird thing online, and this is totally getting away from like the idea of puns at all, of like dad humor and people being really into dads and making jokes about dads. And you know, I think moms are very funny, and I think there's room there to innovate and to give some love to the mom's humor.
Well, let's talk about it as a sort of form of comedy. I mean, neither of you are saying that they're particularly funny, you know, guffaw funny. But unlike other forms of comedy, there's no real message other than playfulness or maybe cleverness. Are puns about showing how clever you are?
I think they can be. I think it's a way for people who like language to sort of play around with language. The woman who hosts the Punderdome, who I talked to, you know, called it like comedy's annoying little brother, like kind of poking you in the ribs. But I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, whimsy and silliness for their own sake.
Anything on that from you, Charlie?
Absolutely agree that whimsy and silliness are key. And I will even, like you mentioned in your article, Bob's Burgers, the burger of the day, and trying, you know, really to catch that exterminator truck. Every episode starts with a bunch of rats that run into the restaurant at one point, and the exterminator truck always pulls up, and it has a different pun on the side every single episode. You try really hard to read it, and you laugh at it, and you've got Jon Stewart, you know, who we're all talking about right now, and his Mesopotamia. I would consider both of those, you know, very modern humor, very held up as funny things that are current. But to me, it's the Fritos thing. It's like they made a really great salad and then put a couple of Fritos on it. And it's if Bob's Burgers and Jon Stewart were mostly about puns, we wouldn't watch them.
Well, those are visual puns as well. Is it better? Does a pun work better when it's written rather than delivered by somebody? Which always has a kind of, I don't know, cocked eyebrow. They're waiting for the response almost. Either.
I like both. You know, I think it's, you know, I think it works in that sort of selling way as a headline of a story, or you see them a lot in advertising because it's quick and it's funny and it's clever and it gets people's attention. It's a way to connect with people quickly when you have sort of an economy of words.
That's true.
You also mentioned, Julie, in your opening statement, you said that at least you are getting a reply. At least you are getting a response. Isn't that the point?
Yeah. You know, I think that you see it a lot on Twitter, like I was saying, and, you know, it's what's worse, if you make a joke and you receive silence, or you make a joke and someone groans. Like, at least it's sort of being appreciated, if in an annoyed way.
You did put a link to someone's account on Twitter who'd made a pun who was getting a lot of flack for it, but at least he got a reaction. Isn't that the point on Twitter? Somebody picked up on it.
My only thing is are you sure that you want that grab? Because it's just a short circuit reaction. And I agree with like headlines and stuff, they are often a good way to show a sense of whimsy very quickly, but it's the opportunity cost of what could have gone there that I always wonder.
So Charlie, are you siding then with the Chinese government and you want to ban puns?
No, I think, to me, that's more like the lady who blinked Morse code help with her eyes while she was giving her hostage statement. That's that sort of story to me, and that's fascinating, to use the puns to get around the censors. To me, the key is, why do people groan? And like you say, you know, the people who deliver them often deliver them leaning forward a little bit and with a elbow jabbing to, you know, an invisible person to their right, and waiting for you to be annoyed. And it's like, that's fine now and then, but it's a very slippery slope if you do it too much. a very treacherous path.
I think by groaning, you're like giving in, right? Because I think the groans and the mock outrage are now like part of the performative aspect of puns. If people didn't do that, then we, you know, you wouldn't expect it. And so I think that's, I think on Twitter too, I think that's part of the fun. I don't think anyone's really that angry that someone tweeted a pun about a political candidate, but, you know, it's fun to be like, oh, delete your account, or I'm throwing my phone into traffic now. That's half the fun is people get it pretending to be mad about it.
Right.
So, Charlie, you said there's no real human connection there. Throwing your phone into traffic as a response? Human connection?
That person, by not making a pun, has created now a feeling of a human feeling that I know I've felt before, and by pretending to be outraged, they have amused me in a way that's not making me groan.
You're LOLing, you're ROFLing.
Exactly, yeah. I'm hashtag chuckling. But one of my favorite things to do is play those hashtag games on Twitter. And they're basically elaborate puns. It's the most elaborate pun you can make then gets you a retweet or a star or a follower. And I can't be like the Chinese government. I just have to say, what could you have done instead?
Well, Charlie Hopper, thank you for speaking with us and being willing to play along.
You're more than welcome.
Julie Becken, thank you as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Julie Beck, she's associate senior editor for The Atlantic, where she wrote about the love of hating puns. And Charlie is a principal at Larimore & Young. It's an advertising agency. He professed to hating puns in a McSweeney's article.
So if you can't raise a chuckle, and if they don't like your puns that were clever on the BBC in 1951... You're the king, absolute king of corny. So let the bad times roll. You're an absolute fun factory with no quality control. Singing dad jokes are bad jokes. It's sad, but it's true. If you love your dad's jokes, the joke is on you.